I just want to apologize to Mike's mom and Josh's mom and my mom. I am so, so sorry, because it is my fault, because it was my project.
Search of the three missing Montgomery College students continues in Frederick County tonight.
10 days and thousands of man hours have been unable to produce any clues.
We have a few leads, a few other options we want to take advantage of and just try to put together some pieces to this puzzle.
Do you believe the occult may be involved in the disappearance of your son?
I am so scared.
Hello, hello, hello out there in podcast and YouTube land. You have reached Johnny Has the Keys, and we are going to play up four today, four big time, because it's season four of our little endeavor here. Tim's being quiet, but he's not really quiet. We have to make a preface, and we have to make, you know, we have to say this. We were going to say that this was a found footage episode, but it's really not. We were going to go live with this episode, and we've been touting it and talking about it on Facebook and social media and everywhere else. We wanted it to be live, but kind of events in life, the way they have been for the past year or so, transpired. And so this is not technically live. We are actually recording this on Saturday to air on Monday. So you're not watching it live, you know.
We are the dead.
We are, but we will be... It will be unedited. I'm not going to edit it. I may sweeten a little bit, but I'm not going to edit or change or cut. So we are going to be feeling like we're live.
Right.
And Tim is actually monitoring this live session that you're watching. If you are on the YouTube and watching us live, Tim is monitoring it. So you can leave questions in the chat and comments, and he'll comment back to you and he will be live.
I will be live in the chat.
In the chat. Mm-hmm. He's not live right now. But anyway, if you're listening to us on a podcast, we're not live, but you're listening to Johnny Has the Keys, and I'm David, and I'm here with my good friend Tim, and we do a little thing about horror and science fiction. The key influences that have contributed to these movies or television shows or sometimes literature, and then the elements that came out of it, the key references that came out of that, and I'm excited as hell that we've been doing this for 4 years.
It's quite amazing. We have 100th episode coming up in a mere 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100 episodes. And I know that, you know, people say, oh, everybody.
Actually, 3 weeks. It'll be the fourth episode of this season. Yeah.
Well, and people say, you know, everybody has a podcast and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, but we kind of like ours, and we hope everybody else does too. You know,
yeah. We tailor it to.
And I do think it's worth mentioning. I think we mentioned it a little bit during big COVID height and everything else that, you know, since we've started this podcast, you and I have not been in the same room together.
No, I haven't seen you since 2003 or four, maybe
something like that. Face to face.
Actually, maybe even 2002. It's been a minute.
It's been a minute. So, and hopefully maybe near the end of this year, we'll see what happens, but we'd love to get together and do one and maybe do a live one together.
If there wasn't a Delta variant, I might be at Universal's Houses of Horror this fall.
You might still want to plan on it. It's going to be
dark
cool.
spaces with people right now. So,
well, they'll all have masks on. Come on. So there's
that. They will have masks on. That's true.
What have you been doing? Have you been doing anything cool since we've been away or this week or whatever?
Well, we were off for about 6 weeks. You know, I've been airing a lot of outtakes and behind the scenes stuff that we do.
Yeah, you have.
So people are probably very refreshed to see this is actually new material. Mm-hmm. I have been continuing something I started, and no, it's not The Walking Dead. I am still watching the Marvel movies in timeline order. And I watched these four over the last 6 weeks.
Is it the master timeline or is it? No, just kidding.
This is the MCU timeline, the one that is suggested on Disney Plus. Of course, I've seen all these movies before, but I'm revisiting them. Starting with Avengers, Thor, The Dark World, Iron Man 3, and Captain America, Winter Soldier.
Two of those are, as you know, are my favorite Marvel movies.
I suspect it would be Avengers and Captain America.
That is totally correct. Winter Soldier, I think, is the best MCU movie, probably,
it's
overall.
Pretty cool.
I just love it. I love the action
actually,
in it. Yeah.
Yeah, I had forgotten a lot of these two movies or these four movies, but mainly Thor and Iron Man 3, I had pretty much forgotten. So I actually enjoyed revisiting them and I didn't mind them as much this time.
Is Iron Man 3 the one with the he has the multi Iron Man and it's one where the guy has the thing that makes people blow up? They turn red and blow up or whatever.
Yeah, they have like this super energy inside them that makes them glow from the inside. And sometimes they blow up because of just, I don't know, some people just don't work out. And others become super powerful and can control it.
Now, is Iron Man 3 the one? That's not the one with the Mandalorian. Or Mandalorian. The Mandarin. Is it? Or that's two.
Yes, Ben Kingsley. No. Yes. Oh,
is the Mandarin in 3? Right.
Yeah. It's very, very Taliban like terrorist type movie. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. The next movie coming out next month, September, I think, is the Shin Li and the Ten Rings or whatever.
Actually, it's coming out really soon because I saw an ad for it. And this is we're recording this actually kind of on time.
This is on time. So
it is coming out soon. I saw it advertised on like Disney Plus or something.
Right. And I read the thing that his father in it is the Mandarin, the real Mandarin that Ben Kingsley was impersonating or faking in Iron Man 3.
Oh, he's I didn't know he was impersonating anybody. I thought it was someone they created as just like a terrorist. He
was no,
like
there a was a generic. There is a real terrorist called the Mandarin.
Oh, yeah. I had no idea. Yeah, no, he plays a little British stoner that's like sleeping with a bunch of hookers and they just pay him because he's an actor to act like a terrorist on camera. Yeah. I actually really enjoyed it. I was like, I don't remember this movie that much, but I thought it was pretty good. I liked the fact that they actually injected that horrible shit into Pepper.
Yeah.
And she was going to be, I figured that was going to be her superhero transformation or whatever, but they ended up getting it out at the end.
Yeah. I liked her in it. I liked her. And I liked, you know, it was like Stark first starting his humility trek, you know, realizing that you aren't perfect all the time kind of thing.
That's funny that you mentioned that because I was going to bring this up. First of all, he has panic attacks in the movie, but the reason for his panic attacks is this recurring theme that we had in a later generation of the Marvel movies. In the Marvel series, I should say, on Disney Plus, we watched WandaVision, Falcon and the Winter Soldier,
mm-hmm.
and
Loki,
mm-hmm. and all of them. Talk about what it's like after the blip.
Yep.
Like that's the big thing, you know, the world went through a hiccup and this is what it's like now. Well, they were doing it in these movies that I just watched, but it was New York after New York.
Yep.
Everything was after New York. And that's why Iron Man was having panic attacks. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting that they just decided to do that all over again, that theme or whatever.
Well, that's why I'm really pissed off that Figgy and whoever, the gods, the powers that be, have kind of disowned Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because I really like that series a lot. And it ties into every single Marvel movie.
Oh, I'm sure.
Like when Thor destroys London, the next week, when that movie came out, the next week on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they were assigned to go to London to do cleanup because of everything that happened.
When did that happen? In Ragnarok?
No, in the third Thor.
That is Ragnarok.
Then it would have been Darkness.
Dark World?
Yeah.
I don't remember him being in London. A lot of that took place on another planet.
Yeah. I don't remember.
There may have been some of it in London. That may have been the case. I can't remember. Anyway, yeah. That's funny.
But it's interesting. They thread the S.H.I.E.L.D. threads all the way through the MCU. And now it's just like they're all going, no, it never happened. Just ignore all that. Whatever. Anyway.
But the thing that's great about that first Avengers movie is just the humor that Joss brought to it. There's a lot of great dialogue in that movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Avengers and Ultron, even though a lot of fanboys hate Ultron, I like it mostly because Joss Whedon's writing and direction in it. Mm-hmm. It's great character work. It just works. I think it's interesting that we're starting out our fourth season. Well, and for those of you who may be joining us for the first time, you know, Tim and I never script anything. We don't even compare notes.
Nah.
So all of this is fresh to each of us, each episode we throw each other. But I find it interesting that you, in your spare time, have been doing essentially science fiction, Marvel.
That's weird.
I have become addicted to this new series that I found. It started, and I'm not like Tim. I don't have the graphics to support this, but it started on CBS, I found out, and then Netflix. It's one of those where Netflix saved it and gave it a second and third season, and I'm just about halfway through the first season, but it's called Evil. Have you heard about this at all?
Just the title. I don't know anything about it.
I had been seeing the title over and over again and stuff, and I thought, what is this, and why is it like now getting a lot of airplay on Netflix and everything? But basically, picture like X-Files meets Fringe, sort of. It's a very skeptical female psychologist who is basically making her living by getting paid by the court to testify on characters, you know, who are trying to plead insanity or who are having psychological disorders. And she's a psychiatrist who works for the prosecution. Right. Well, she is hired for a project by a priest in training and a blue collar kind of techno whiz guy, his partner. They're working together, and they go around, and they're being paid by the Catholic Church to go around and investigate demonic possessions and miracles and other extraordinary occurrences or things that happen or whatever. So it's like this trio, and they investigate evil, and it's really compelling. It's so cool. I really want you to watch it because I think you'll really like it. The cast is really strong. The cast is Kaja Herbers, who was the daughter in Westworld. If you watch Westworld, you'll know what I mean. It was the man
only
in Black's
the first
daughter.
Season. It's been a minute.
It was the man in Black's daughter. She played that character, and she's great in it. And then Mike Coulter plays the quote priest in training to be an exorcist sort of guy, and he's a very large African-American man. He was in something else that everybody liked, and I can't remember it was another superhero show where he was Luke Cage.
I love him. Actually, I saw him on a Match Game the other day, and I was like, who is this really handsome guy that's very funny on the show, and what is he doing? And then they said Luke Cage, and I went, okay, he's a Marvel person.
I would love for you to watch this just to see the first two episodes, just to see his charm. He is so good.
Yeah, I mean, he won us over, and we were watching him on a stupid game show.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, he's really good. And there's a There's another actor in it that I really like named Michael Emerson. He's always played the nice guy. Like he was the lead in Person of Interest, the Nolan series about the computer that was the AI that was predicting whether people would live or die or whatever. And he's always played like the little geek or the little guy, because he's a little short actor. He usually has round glasses. He's kind of geeky looking.
All I can picture is those two actors in Blade Runner.
Yeah.
both the creator and the one that loved Chris. they're both little guys.
Yeah.
One of them had round glasses.
It's that kind of, he always plays that kind of character. And he still looks that way in this. But his name is like Leland or something like that. But anyway, I strongly feel after like five episodes in, he is the devil. If he's not the devil, he is an agent thereof, a very powerful demon.
Mm-hmm.
Because he'll be like this very sweet, soft voice. And he'll go, you know, like your dream you had last night, you know, and start telling her all this stuff that she has not told anybody yet. And then he goes, oh, come on. You know, like there was this one where he set up this kid who was innocent to go to prison. And she is trying to defend him, talking to him. And she goes, don't you understand? He's such a nice little kid. He's such a nice kid. And he goes, after the second rape in prison, he won't be. And then you just go, what did he just say?
Yeah.
He's that kind of really creepy, diabolical. It's really cool. I was really impressed watching it. I was like,
and all of it's on Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah. And they just renewed it for, I think, a third season. Yeah.
So there's two seasons on Netflix and now Netflix owns it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
One of those Netflix saves. But anyway, I find it interesting that we have reverse genres on what we've been doing.
That's how funny.
Kind of pseudo in sync we are, sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess we could wait till the end because this would have been a perfect segue into our topic, but yeah. I didn't know if we wanted to give a few shout outs to people that we know could potentially be watching this.
Sure. Even though it's not of course live. We're live right now. Aren't
right.
we? Yeah, sure. But sure, yeah.
We're live. This is not a documentary about a fake witch in Maryland.
Right. No, not at all. We have nothing to do with that.
I was going to mention one that just emailed me messaged me the other day. His name is Andrew Marler. He suggested we cover The Stuff. If you remember that Larry Cohen movie from the 1980s.
Marshmallow goo or something. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Are you eating it or is it eating you?
You.
Yeah. And it had Garrett Morris in it from Saturday Night Live.
Uh-huh.
So I will add that to our master list, but we've obviously already chosen this season's movies, but maybe it'll end up on next one's.
Yeah. And thanks for the suggestion. Anybody, you guys have suggestions, put them in chat right now. Tim will write them all down.
Absolutely. It'll be awesome. I will definitely add them to the list.
That's a good shout out.
Do you want to do one? Do you want to bounce them back? Because I may have some of yours.
Well, shout out to Buck. Buck has always been a great supporter of us and really appreciate him. And if you're listening, yay, thank you. And you're one of our biggest patrons and we love that. He's always got some cool suggestions and some cool insights.
He was the whole reason behind that Terminator double feature we did last season or two seasons ago. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also wanted to shout out to Holly Anderson Collins.
Woo-hoo!
Who is a huge horror fanatic that I talk with almost daily on Facebook.
She rivals you, I think, for horror.
She kind of does. I was like looking at some horror groups to promote this live episode in, and I noticed that every time I went to one, she was already a member in it.
Yeah.
It's like, that's hilarious.
Yeah, I see her post, and it's like, enjoying this now, and it's like some bloody severed hand thing, whatever. You know.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Something really horrible that
right.
I would probably be interested in. Your turn.
Well, we also want to recognize, 30 and Nerdy, the podcast guys. It's Tyler. And they always talk about us and support us, and we support them as well. They're more on the total geek side and enjoying it, and we're more on the scary sci-fi song.
Yeah, they probably laugh at our superhero episodes.
I know.
That's
I'm sure
all they,
talk
about.
They don't know what they're talking about, right. You know, or whatever.
Right. I would also be remiss to not mention Joe Powell, who I continually ridicule on this show sometimes because some of the things he says. But we do love you, Joe, even though your picture on Facebook is that of Akira Kurosawa.
He does that occasionally. He'll do that one. And sometimes he'll do, like, you know, the young kid from Citizen Kane. You know, he'll do these bizarre, obscure profile pics that are bizarre.
Right, he does.
I guess my last one would be to Lee Russell. Lee's another big supporter of us, and Lee always has such great suggestions. One of the best wits I've ever worked with, and he's just always he'll send me texts at like 3 a.m. going, okay, what if we recast Mannix with superheroes? And I was like, what? And it's because he was watching an episode of Mannix or something and just got this idea.
That's where books come from, by the way.
There you go.
When you think about that, a lot of books are just reworked plots from movies, sitcoms, and other books. So. The only other person I have, well, other than my husband, Dennis, who, God bless him, is Chris Wiley, who we used to do, or I used to do theater with a long time ago. You may still see him around.
Oh, I do.
He's usually buzzing in on some of our chats as well.
Yeah.
But any of you that are listening right now, can, even though this is not live, like David said, if you'd like to comment or suggest a movie or tell us that we're just a bunch of crazy dumbasses, please do. Please do. We would love to hear that. And I guess that makes a good segue, since I said dumbasses, our topic of the
premiere episode of season four.
This is a little movie that came out just before that big Y2K. This movie is called The Blair Witch Project. I struggle with this movie because it does belong in the hallowed halls of horror movies, because it is going to be always a revered horror movie for certain reasons, and it deserves it for certain reasons. Is it good? I don't personally think so, but it is it's undeniably a classic movie. Regardless of how I feel about it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
I think a lot of people struggle with this movie. It was extremely popular, but also got panned a lot by critics and other people. It also got supported by critics. You know, Gene Siskel loved it and thought it was a great experiment.
Very creative.
I'm like you. I struggle with it because I struggle with it because I want closure from a storytelling perspective.
Mm-hmm. And there
is none. Then I think more of cinema as cinema and pushing the boundaries of cinema and changing genres up and everything else. And it must be revered for that and for what it did. It did not start the found film footage thing.
No, it did not. I have a very great key that goes a good 25 years back, probably. So,
but I think it is noted as probably the most successful one, and it really did start the trend rolling hugely. So once we get to Keys, there'll be a lot of one or two I know of Keys prior to this, and then a bunch after,
right?
You know, that it influenced.
As far as, like, I guess I should do a quick synopsis, which is really easy.
Sure.
Three college students that are wannabe documentarians, their names are Heather, Josh, and Mike, decide they're going to go out into the woods with a camera because they want to make a documentary on the legendary Blair Witch of Burkittsville, Maryland. And They disappear and never return. Their footage is found and put together as this movie. And one of the reasons this movie is so popular is because of the hype behind it, because they did try to lead people into believing that it was true.
Yeah, it originally appeared at Sundance. But prior to that, this is probably a great work of marketing genius. Mm-hmm. Because this was prior to, you know, the huge research, you know, huge rise of the internet. So it wasn't that it wasn't out there, but it wasn't like we are today with it daily and social media and all that. You had message boards and blogs and stuff like that. So information was there, but trickled a lot slower than it does today.
Well, if you looked, I don't know if you did any research on the budget. It only cost them $60,000 to make this movie, yep. But the budget ended up being closer to $500,000 after post-production.
And marketing.
Marketing, exactly. Yep. Most of this movie was marketing.
Well, like your poster on the left there, that is the missing poster, mm-hmm. That's what they put up all over Sundance for the Sundance Festival. Which was great. It was a great idea.
Yeah.
And a lot of people watched this.
It's a great idea, but it's still a gimmick.
It is. But the whole movie's a gimmick.
Right.
The whole, you know.
Yeah.
I'm like you. I'm very conflicted about this movie because I want the closure. I don't think the structure of the movie works. I don't think the mythos holds together or hangs up at all. Together at all.
It's like a badly written novel.
But I love some of the performances. I think are really strong at times. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes they go over, but I think they're really strong. And I'm really pissed off that we didn't do it because I like the idea. It is so simple and so straightforward.
We could have easily made this movie, but we would have put an ending on it.
I mean,
even that stupid little horror film we filmed in my house with Frank and David, we still had an ending to it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's a big cop-out, I think, in this movie, mm-hmm. is that they don't. There's some really cool stuff to it. There's like 6 minutes in this movie that are total black, and you're just hearing audio, like a podcast that you're listening to now. But you know, you mostly hear... What the fuck was that? You know, over and over. But
or you'll hear kids laughing or screaming or something. Yeah.
So there are mood moments in this that I think work. I think some of the character development works, I think, in this. And I really, really compliment.
They're good actors. They were all hired for improvisational skill.
Correct. They were only given like a 35-page synopsis sort of thing of what was going to happen. And then they were literally directed. Well, there's another thing, too. Not only did it cost $60,000 to start shooting it, but it was also shot in 8 days,
right.
The whole movie.
And a lot of that time it was raining.
Yeah. And they were given directions and instructions by walkie-talkie or by notes from the directors, and basically the three actors shot the movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing unique about this movie.
Yeah, it's lazy.
It's not lazy. I thought it was really interesting.
It is, I guess, yeah. It was shot by them, though. I mean, I'm assuming it was. I mean, sometimes it doesn't necessarily have to be.
No, it was. I mean, I think the one documentary thing I watched or read said that 95% of this movie was shot by them. So much so that there were scenes that they wanted to have in it that weren't in it because they didn't shoot it. Like when they do the third or the second or third run out of the tents and they're running and everything else and they're running from whatever was, you know, scaring them in the tent. At one point, one of them was supposed to pan over, and they had an actress in a white dress like a witch at the very edge of the woods. Mm-hmm. But the actor never panned the camera over, so you never saw it.
And they forgot or didn't realize that the actor didn't do it. Yeah, I heard that. I read that somewhere.
So they filmed a lot of it, for good or bad. You know, I know people that are affected by the motion sickness, people who...
Yeah, it's terrible.
Who, don't like the handy cam sort of thing. I actually find this on, this was like my fourth time watching it. I actually found it easier to watch this than it was to watch Cloverfield, which I think it was, is really bad for a,
not the Cloverfield for a shaky with cam. Dan Goodman.
No, Cloverfield, the first one. Movie, not the Cloverfield Lane secret tunnel.
The Cloverfield Lane's great.
Yeah, I haven't watched that yet.
Yeah, so it's not a shaky cam at all. It's funny, we neglected to say that. You just said you've seen it four times. What was the first time you saw this movie?
I saw it at the movie.
At the movie theater?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
probably 2 weeks after it opened. I mean, I had to go because everybody was talking about this movie.
I don't even know. I may have seen it opening day. I lived just, at the time, I lived like 20 miles away from where this was filmed. And I went with my nephew Jason, and this is the first time I've seen this movie since we saw it in the theater back in 1999.
Yeah. Okay, so tell me your thoughts then, your overall take.
I still think it fucking sucks. I don't like it.
What the fuck is wrong? What the fuck is wrong?
I mean, it has moments, and I can appreciate the creativity that went behind it, but I can't forgive the shaky cam. I can't forgive the fact that they kind of copped out on the ending. And I think a lot of the fluff in the middle is that it is fluff and not very substantial. There are some things that are cool. Like, I like Coffin Rock. I thought that was a pretty cool concept. And I thought the shot, obviously, that's the most famous one of her crying in extreme close-up is really cool. I even like the shot of the guy at the end that's facing away. Yeah, exactly. But overall, I don't like this movie.
Interesting.
I'm the horror guy, and I don't like this movie.
Did your nephew like it?
You know, I can't remember. And that's funny because I'm supposed to see him next week, but I'm not sure if that's going to happen now. I mean, we were probably both jonesing to see it and excited, but I seem to remember us both being disappointed when we came out of that theater.
I remember that, and like I said, this is the fourth time I've seen it, and every time at the ending, I get angrier and angrier at the ending. I think when the first time I saw it, I left going, so what the hell happened at the end? That doesn't make any sense. Why would...
The movie was found, David. It was never finished.
Yeah.
That's the cop-out.
Yeah. My other thought after like the second or third time watching was, okay, if it was found, that means somebody went into that house and got those cameras.
Yeah.
Witch let them do that?
And what I also thought was it was found a year later and that film's not all fucked up and corroded or whatever in the rain out in the woods.
We have to live with that. The same way we live with the fact that we have that one line where she goes, we could light a small country with the batteries we have, or whatever it is. It's like to explain the fact that your batteries last for four damn days.
Is that flashlight still working?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
No. This time, I have to admit, from a cinematography standpoint, so, and this gets really uber layered and or in the weeds kind of thing, in the woods, huh? But they each have their roles. Heather, the girl, her camera is the Hi-8 camera. It's the color one. And that's where we see a lot of the movie. And that's where we hear a lot of her character development. Because she's the director, so she talks a lot through it, and she's trying to calm everybody down, or she's trying to get the shot, or whatever.
Or teasing them, or whatever.
And then Josh, who they've known each other, she knows Josh, they're friends, yada, yada. He's the stoner, long-haired dude. But he is carrying the 16mm camera, which shoots in black and white, without audio. It has no sound. Mike has the DAT machine that they keep talking about DAT. They never explain what a DAT is, but it's the audio recorder because he's recording all the audio. And I thought, okay, cool. But at the end of this movie, I realized this time what always bugged me about it was you hear Heather through most of the very end. Once Mike goes into the house,
Oh, she's, it's like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. She's screaming constantly.
You hear Heather screaming the entire time, but her voice keeps sounding far away or really close, or far away or really close.
Okay.
And I kept thinking, I'm confused about who is, and it's because she has the high eight, Mike has the 16 now, and Mike doesn't have audio. She has audio. So when it cuts to Mike and you're seeing him black and white and he's looking around, everything else, she sounds really far away because it's her audio. And then when it cuts to her, she's really, really loud, but you can barely hear Mike. And I thought, that really is confusing me. And they should have just done it the opposite, just had one audio track that works for that. And because it really confused me.
And because they could have fixed that with all the money they had for post-production.
You know, well, I read that, too, that, you know, originally when their first edit of this was 2.5 hours long. Can you imagine this for 2.5 hours?
I would have left.
If anybody else can imagine this for 2.5 hours, put that in the chat so Tim can respond to you.
Would you be with me at the bar?
But 2.5 hours, and then they edited it down, and they were editing it because they kept watching it over and over again for anything that looked fake. They wanted it all to look real and be real. That was their big go-to directorial conceit, was it has to be believable. And that gets into the other thing I like about the movie is I do like the way they did it. You know, we've talked about directors who have pulled pranks on, you know, are manipulative directors. Manipulative, manipulative. I really said
it's
that.
It's manipulative.
Yeah, I thought so. manipulative directors and how they've handled actors in the past and what they've done to them, sometimes cruelly, you know, sort of thing. Kind of like the way they did these guys. Like, I read in the notes that I was finding that, like, when they interview the townspeople, there was no script for that. So they didn't know what these townspeople were going
to
tell
and
them.
And sometimes you can tell they're just trying to make stuff up. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
You can tell they're like, are they trying to get more camera time?
Well, in a couple of places, but also the fact that for our cast, you know, the three, they didn't, you know, especially Heather, she didn't know what they were going to say.
No.
Or what they were, how they were going to answer these questions.
Mm-hmm.
Josh, the actor and the character, was not familiar with the 16mm camera, so that's why the one lady, that creepy, weird lady they interview, is all out of focus. Because he didn't focus the camera. He didn't know how. But the first scene when they're all scared at night was the directors actually poking and shaking their tent. But they didn't know they were going to do that. So, and they would intentionally, like, send them on a trail up this hill and everything else, knowing that it wasn't going to be a comfortable hike.
But why did they have the camera running then, if they're asleep in the tent at night?
Well, they turned it on because they heard something. It's that typical, you turn it on to record
I don't know.
Hey, they set Heather up from the very beginning. She's going to try to record everything. She's going to record everything she can, so much so that there's that entire argument that, to me, sucks forever, where they're telling her to turn the camera off. And it goes on for like 6 or 8 minutes. Turn the fucking camera. Just turn it off. You know, and he even knocks her down at one point. Mike knocks her down. I find that a lot more believable than the BS with the map. That's what pissed me off was, what? Where did that come from? And why would he kick it into the... What? Yeah. I don't understand.
It's floating down the river, man.
Yeah. That was... Just, no, I didn't enjoy that at all. that was... No.
A lot of the arguing got... I know it was a character development, but a lot of the arguing got old. You get tired of hearing people yell at each other.
Yeah. And I read also that that's actually cut back. There were actually was a lot more arguing that they did.
You said the original cut was 2.5 hours. My notes say it took 8 days to shoot, 8 months to edit.
Yep.
And the first cut was 2.5 hours. I'm like, God, that would be torture to me.
Yeah, you would not. That would not be a good thing for you. No. But other things, I like the fact that they, you know, went without a soundtrack. There's no music in this entire movie anywhere.
It would seem fake if there was.
Correct.
Yeah.
They went with a really bland color palette. So even the color scenes look really faded and washed out. And
but the, a lot of that was done in post. You know that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I was like, I read somewhere where they said it looked too clean, so they had to make it dirty for the print. Mm-hmm. And I noticed as soon as I started watching it, I was like, that looks like that was done, you know, in post. It does not look like real film. It looked like it had been aged intentionally.
Yeah, they color correct.
Yeah, it looks, yeah, exactly, like it's painted or something. It's weird.
And then they give moments, like that one moment with Heather when she's crying and Josh is making fun of her, and she's really golden lit. It's really a nice kind of, not overly, but a little bit more color. And like the image I have, the her last one when she's doing her snotty goodbye thing, mm-hmm. is lots of color. And we haven't seen color in a while. So I came away this fourth time thinking the same thing I always have, which is this was a fairly decent student film. I would have given this a B+ in college, you know, kind of thing.
Okay.
That's the way I've always thought of this movie, is it's a grand experiment kind of thing.
Dance 10 looks 3.
What?
All I could think of was that song from Chorus Line, Dance 10 looks 3.
Yeah.
For concept, I give it a 10. For completion, I give it a 3.
A 3. So it's needless to say, I guess there aren't any memorable scenes in this for you. You don't have any.
Well, I mean, the most memorable two scenes are the scene with him, obviously, at the very end, standing in the corner, and the scene that we've been talking about with her and the snotty nose. Those are the two most, or the two iconic scenes, I would say, from this movie. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed her bonding with Mike when they realized they're probably going to die, even though her and Mike had been fighting a lot. All of a sudden, they were friends. I thought that was real.
That felt real. And I liked the way they did that with the jump cuts of her going over and hugging him and mm-hmm. everything, and it was all jumpy. Yeah, I liked that. That was mm-hmm. cool.
But honestly, until I watched it the second time, I always thought it was Josh standing in the corner at the end. I didn't realize it was Mike.
Yeah, because Josh had- is all cut up and tied in sticks.
Maybe Josh wasn't, and that was him standing in the corner, which would have been a little more intriguing. But, yeah, sticks. Let's talk about sticks.
There's a lot of sticks in this movie. There's a lot of sticks.
Yeah, I think I have a better picture.
I don't think they had the prop budget for no sticks.
Well, I mean, you know, I just thought of a key. There's a story called Sticks by Carl Edward Wagner that's really good, that's set in Knoxville, actually.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
I've read that. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I think they're creepy. I think that they rely on them too much. And then when the bundles started coming, I'd had it. I was like, no. So supernatural delivery at your doorstep.
Well, the one that got me was, so wait, you guys are already spooked out and kind of creeped out being in the woods. You're in your tent at night, and this witch can build 3 piles of rocks right outside your tent, and you don't hear it? Seriously? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, so, yeah. I don't think the myth, as I said at the beginning, I don't think the mythos holds together at all.
No, and it's clear that when you're writing a novel, they call them, and it's a screenplay too, they call them setups and payoffs. And they set up stuff in the interviews with the townspeople. And yeah. I guess they thought, those payoffs have to be good payoffs or your novel's going to fail. And the payoff of him standing at the corner at the end was not enough of a payoff to end the movie on.
Yeah.
It's like, and oh my God, that guy said a kid stood in the corner. What? Who cares?
And we had 3 different mythologies too. We had the witch, and supposedly there was a witch, and she was burned, and yada yada. Mm-hmm. We have the Coffin Rock incident with all of these guys who are arranged in a weird way and then their bodies disappear. And we have this serial child murderer.
Right.
Who put people in the corner, put one in the corner so he could kill the other one, then kill that one. And they burned his house down. Yet when they get to his house, it's not burned down.
It's not burnt down. It's there.
And there's little bitty baby handprints everywhere.
Right. That house has been torn down since. I read that. I did some history on that. I wanted to find out if it still existed. Because a lot of this movie owes Sam Raimi. That's a huge key. But the thing is Sam Raimi made a good movie.
Yeah, true. True. Well, I sum it up by saying, it. You know, I used to say all the time that Evil Dead was the J.C.'s haunted house of horror movies. You could tell that's a guy in a costume. You could tell that that's maybe Caro Syrup, da, 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 but it still has moments where things jump out and scare you.
Oh, it scares the fuck out of me.
It genuinely makes you feel uncomfortable in places. Yeah. You know, this movie to me is that witch story told around the campfire. It can set a mood that makes it kind of creepy, but then usually there's no payoff at the end of a witch story, or somebody just goes boo at the end of the campfire story.
I would have absolutely loved to have heard that hokey music from The Evil Dead in this movie. That would have been great. Yeah. Dun, dun, that crazy keyboard.
Join us. Yeah. Yeah.
We don't have to. I'm sorry, you with me?
No, you go ahead.
I was just gonna say I don't have a lot on cast, but I did want to mention. Like I said, they were all three improvisational actors and were cast for that reason. But the director and writers, Daniel Myrick and Eduardo Sanchez, have really not done anything else except Blair Witch stuff. I mean, that's basically their resume.
One of them is gone. I think Eduardo's done more.
A little bit.
Yeah, but no, Sanchez. Sanchez has actually done a little bit of television. He's directed Eduardo Sanchez. He's directed a bunch of Supernaturals and a bunch of that new series, Lucifer. He's directed episodes of that.
But Daniel is just Blair Witch, and that's it. I mean,
that was his one shot. Yep.
Right.
One note.
That right there sums a lot of this up for me, I think.
Yeah.
So I don't really have anything else on that. I do have a trivia note that I want to, two actually. One is that the word fuck is used 154 times.
Yeah, obviously.
Heather is like a cursing demon. But one of my favorite things that I would have probably loved this movie had it been in there. Is that one of the original ideas was for a giant stick figure to chase them through the woods.
Ooh, there you go. You would have liked that. Wicker Man.
Yeah. That would have been awesome. So, anyway.
Any awards? Did this movie win anything?
This movie actually did win a lot of small indie awards. So many that I did not include them all, but I did include two that I think speak volumes. One is that it won the Cannes Film Festival Award for Foreign Film.
Okay.
And, it says Award of the Youth. What does that mean? It's one of them weird French awards, I guess. But for Foreign Film, Award of the Youth? I don't know. Anyway, the other
youngest
one,
actors.
The other one that it won was the Stinker Bad Movies of the Year Awards for Biggest Disappointment.
I think I read somewhere too it won a Razzie, or it was nominated for a Razzie Awards or whatever.
I didn't see that, but I thought Stinker Bad Movies. I've never heard of that, so I thought it was kind of funny. Stinker Bad Movie Awards winner, Biggest Disappointment.
Biggest disappointment. We expected more from you.
A lot more.
I'm very conflicted in this movie because I think there are some things that worked for it, but some things that really don't. And one of those is like good filmmaking. It really don't do that well.
And it's like you said, I keep thinking, what would we have done had it been us? And I just think it would have been more entertaining.
Yeah. Well, we probably would have had Rowie as a giant stick man chasing people through the woods. So.
We would have definitely had more happening in that house, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it would have been, if this is our climax, then this is the JC's haunted house. This house is going to be bad.
It's going to be bad, yes. Yeah, it will have some demons or something. Yeah.
Demons.
Yeah.
I neglected to say that, yes, it is on the 1001 movies you must see before you die.
Well, and like you said in your preface, it will be, you know, it will go down in history for what it did accomplish.
Right.
I mean, even at 175 grand total, it earned like 285 million or something.
Yeah, it earned a shit ton. It earned like over 20 million the first weekend, I think, you know, for a $500,000 film. I actually may have wrote it down. It was the record for the highest grossing independent movie of all time until it was surpassed by My Big Fat Greek Wedding in 2002. So it was that for like 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it definitely, you know, earned some monies. People
and
watched.
You know, we talked about the hype, which was one of the reasons why this movie is so popular, is because of the hype. Two things. One is that I didn't realize IMDb existed in 1999, but apparently it did.
Okay.
And the three actors were listed as missing, presumed dead originally on IMDb.
Perfect.
So, I don't know if that's a joke or not, but that was in IMDb's trivia. So I was like, wow, that's interesting. And then the other thing is that another thing that helped, I think, with this movie is that the same director did a documentary that aired on Sci-Fi 2 weeks prior to it being released called Curse of the Blair Witch.
Yeah, and that was another fake like mockumentary based on, mm-hmm. where they had a lot of footage that they didn't use.
Right.
So, yeah. Yeah. And that was pretty smart.
They're playing up the fact that these people are missing and that this movie is coming out and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, their marketing, it deserves recognition. It was brilliantly marketed.
A little shady, but yeah.
I don't.
It's not the first film that did it, though. I've got some examples of some other ones. So.
What would that be? Or is this Key Time? What,
is it
really?
Key Time? It may be Key Time.
Is it Key Time? What do you
have?
Well,
if we're going to jump to that, I used these back when we did the Texas Chainsaw Massacre last season, and they are. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre is one of those films that starts with this story is based on a true story.
Mm-hmm.
Fargo does the same, and neither are true.
right.
I think Fargo does it really well in a tongue-in-cheek kind of way, so I give them that. I don't have a problem with that. But to me, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre was doing the exact same thing that this film was trying to do.
I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. Although it was obviously saying it was a movie. It wasn't saying that it was real or based on a real movie.
Yeah. They didn't claim it was a documentary. No. That would be right. You're right there. Mm-hmm.
But I would agree. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that, but that's very true. It does start out with based on a true story. But there were several movies that have come out even in the 50s and 60s that said based on a true story, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think this was, even though they claimed that they were the first, I've got in my notes that a lovely film that I'm sure you watched. As a matter of fact, I'm sure you've mentioned it to me before. Cannibal Holocaust.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is totally one of the first found footage movies.
It is, and we discussed this last season. I had viewed it by accident. I thought I was watching Zombie Holocaust.
That's right.
And I watched
that's right.
Cannibal Holocaust, and it is definitely a found footage movie. Basically, they're editing these films and going to release them from these people that were cannibalized in a jungle. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, right. And so it didn't do that different. My biggest key is Orson Welles, War of the Worlds. The whole
fake
thing that everybody thought was real. And so much.
But he
so
didn't
that,
play it up to be that way. They just misinterpreted it.
Correct. He never. Well, it's
are you
kind
you're talking about the radio broadcast, right?
Yeah, the radio broadcast of War of the Worlds. It's kind of debatable whether or not he thought it would create a sensation or not. Mm-hmm. But based on interviews with him afterwards and everything else, no, I don't think they had a clue that it would affect the country the way it did. So, no, they were just trying to tell a good story in real life radio, I mean, news broadcast style, a fictional story in news broadcast style. So it felt real, even though it wasn't a prank.
Actually, no, now that you mention it, maybe that was set up to make them be misleading.
So to speak, yeah, sort of.
I think it was written. You're right. I'm sorry. My mind went away there for a second because it was set up to sound real.
Right. But they didn't purport it as that. I mean, this was not, they didn't have any advertising the week before saying, yada, yada, this horrible news is going to come this way.
They just kind of did the Alfred Hitchcock metaphor of the exploding bomb.
Yeah.
There it is.
There it is, right in front of you.
Yeah.
But that was what, but you know, there've been so many, post Blair Witch that are found footage.
Oh, yeah. Tons.
I mean, I mentioned Cloverfield. That's one of my keys.
Yep.
Two that are predated and I've seen in a lot of documentaries about this are In Search Of, the Leonard Nimoy fact-based series that we all watched when we were kids. The two directors said that it was a big influence on creating this movie, which I thought was interesting. And Legend of Boggy Creek. Do you remember that movie?
I do. And you're going to laugh when I do this. It's very funny that you bring up Boggy Creek, but especially In Search Of, because one of my keys is a movie from 1976 called Sasquatch.
Sasquatch. I don't think I've ever seen that.
Let me see if I can find where I wrote it down. It has a subtitle.
Is that the one that just had like the white poster and then the typical Bigfoot kind of look walking
like
sideways?
Like the silhouette of Bigfoot.
Yeah.
It's, oh shit, I must not have wrote it down. I know, I could have sworn I put it in here. Anyway, it's called Sasquatch the something, something, something. It's got a subtitle. And I was a kid and went to that movie because I was like, this is going to be scary. And I went, and it did scare me. Now, I tried to watch it a few months ago on Amazon, and it is awful. It is so bad. But basically, it's a bunch of guys running around filming themselves in the woods. Oh, we've got these tripwires and these cans, and they're going to make noise when, you know, Sasquatch comes. And I'm like, wow, did this guy see that movie? Because there's a lot of same stuff going on here. And there's
Could
a scene,
be.
Instead of a tent, they're in a cabin. And all of a sudden, it's not just one. There's more than one. There's one on that side. There's one on this side. There's one on the roof. You know, whatever. I mean, it's very, very similar.
What was the, you know, that's what I feel about Boggy Creek. I don't want to watch it again because I'm afraid it will really suck now. Based on, because I watched it in a drive-in, you know, when I was in high school.
And was a Sasquatch monster too, wasn't it?
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a big bear-like thing, whatever, you know. You reminded me of one other thing I wanted to mention, and I can't think about it. You said, Sasquatch, I wonder if they saw this. There was a movie we watched, I don't think we've covered it on the podcast. Maybe we did. I don't know. It's been 4 years, you know. But anyway, a group of Irish guys go into
Ruins is what you're talking about. The movie I'm talking about is called Sasquatch, The Legend of Bigfoot.
I'm not saying the same thing. I'm saying that one had that same kind of feel of it. The party gradually degenerates as they go through
the
movie.
This
adventure.
Yeah, we watched it first season, and we were going to do it as a movie, and then we got sidetracked, and we never did it, because the first season, we didn't plan these out in advance. We were just saying, okay, let's do this one. Okay, let's do that one.
Let's do this next week.
Yeah. And we watched it, and it has the guy that played the butler on Downton Abbey.
Downton Abbey, yeah. Yeah.
And I like that movie. I thought that movie was cool. It's got a lot of Clive Barker-ish kind of stuff.
Very Clive Barker-y, yeah.
But
especially near
the woods. It's only it's in Europe. Yeah.
Yeah.
I put it down because I think it's called The Ruins. No, it's called The Ritual. That's what
The Ritual. That was it. Yeah. Okay, Key. So I've got... this is a weird kind of key, but it kind of, I think, works. It's not necessarily a direct key to a movie, but this movie was a great example of the power of fandom. So it had so much hype from the marketing and the blogs and the missing kids and everything else that people had to go and see it. And a lot of people, even though they saw it, still thought it was real and got other people to see it. And they had this huge fan base that developed that naturally, led to $280+ million sort of thing. But it reminded me similar of like the power of fandom in general, like the power of fandom with Trek, and saving the first, the original series, the two seasons. And then even now with Manifest, that show that NBC canceled, and all the fans are so much rooting for it that it's probably going to be picked up by Netflix.
They're airing it now, aren't they? Because I think I've seen it advertised.
Yeah, it's like one of their number one shows now. Because
it's like in the top 10 all the time.
Yeah. And a lot of that I've read is because fans who realized NBC canceled it have come back and started watching it over and over again on Netflix, trying to get the numbers up so that hopefully they'll buy it and do it.
But did
you
have a horror movie example that was a key, or are you just saying in general people?
No, a key in general is this fandom preserving or fandom hype of something.
Well, they ended up making a sequel again a few
They
years
made two
ago.
Sequels, didn't they?
Well, one was almost immediate, and then there was one a couple of years ago. And I went on Rotten Tomatoes out of curiosity to see how they were rated. And I want to say Blair Witch Project was like rated, I don't know, 80 something. And the other two didn't add up to 50. One was like 13 and one was like 20 something.
Dang.
It was bad.
That's bad.
Yeah, it was. So I was like, well, I'm not going to watch. I thought, I'll watch one of them. I'll just do some more research for this podcast. And then I was like, I ain't watching that shit. So... I have a lot of keys.
Okay, go for them.
Some if we want to go back to the found footage realm of Cannibal Holocaust, you've got Paranormal Activity.
Oh God,
you've got Wreck, which is
I've got that. Yep,
Wreck is a great Spanish zombie movie, kind of like 28 Days Later.
Wreck's a good version of how to do a found footage horror movie.
It is. And they remade it into an American version called Quarantine, and it's just not as good.
No.
Then these movies are movies, well, Cloverfield you mentioned. These three movies I have not seen, two I haven't even heard of, but they are supposedly, according to IMDb, also found footage movies. One is The Last Exorcism.
I haven't heard of.
Nope. One is Chronicle.
Oh, I've seen Chronicle. Yeah, it's sci-fi found footage.
Okay, and one is called Project X.
I haven't seen that one.
Okay, so I don't know anything about them. But those are all apparently found footage type movies.
I had another one to add to that called Unfriended, which was...
That's recent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was all... Everything basically is shot from... it's shot from webcams of social media, and the monster starts killing people and unfriending you, sort of thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's a social media monster.
It's a social media monster. Yeah, it's a big stick monster.
And it says like.
If you You don't like me. Ring that bell, as you say.
No, that's on YouTube, but it's still social media, I guess. One of the keys I have is actually mentioned in this movie, and it is Deliverance.
Yep.
John Dickey's famous novel that was turned into a movie by John Borman in 1972, starring Burt Reynolds and the famous squealing Ned Beatty.
Yep.
I will leave it at that. Another film we already mentioned that was in the woods was The Evil Dead. You cannot escape the fact that this movie was influenced by The Evil Dead. I can't believe these guys didn't say, hey, let's go make a horror movie in the woods.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Which was the title of the original Evil Dead, In the Woods. Mm-hmm.
Within the Woods.
Yeah. I found this off of IMDb, which I love because I'm actually descended from him. But Washington Irving, the writer, had a story called The Devil and Tom Walker, which is about Tom's wife goes into the swamp to find the devil and never returns home. And when he goes to find her, he finds her apron with her heart and liver inside. Sounds pretty close, doesn't it?
Perfect.
Yeah. It's instead of a bundle of sticks with some bloody teeth in it, it's a heart and liver with in an apron. So, and then another thing that we mentioned, I'm pretty sure we talked about this film when we did The Devil Rides Out last season, but there's a silent documentary from 1922 called Haxan. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right.
Yeah. Haxan.
Haxan.
It's
a witch documentary.
Yeah.
So there's a silent documentary that came out long before this movie. About a silent documentary.
Perfect.
Witches. So, do you have others?
The last one I really have is where was it? A key, although it's more of a concept key and not a direct key to a movie, is this was probably the first film marketed through the internet. Because I read that in two different articles that they said this was the first one that was really, their whole marketing campaign was not focused on posters or on movie commercials on network. It was through the internet. Get people to talk about it, blog about it. Come to the message boards, everything else.
Interesting.
Which led to stuff like Slender Man and, you know, all of those type of weird, bizarre, we're a cult on the internet sort of thing.
It still makes me wonder, did IMDb exist then? Because that's an internet tool. And I guess maybe it did. I know the internet was around back then, but I just didn't know IMDb was.
Well, I was reading a documentary or reading an article about the making of this, and they even talked about they're still editing and putting the final edits on it. They're like 6 months into editing, but they've, you know, really started pushing it on the internet. And they even, the way that it was phrased was, you know, we would get home every night and log into the modem and go on these message boards and start reading what people were saying and start contributing to it. And, you know, so, yeah, it was back then. But and I do think IMDb was back then.
It's also before social media. So people, they were addicted to some other form of internet entertainment.
Oh, yeah. Well, and, you know, you would never be able to do that today because anybody could go online and Google Heather Donahue and say, that's a real person. Mm-hmm. You know, that's an actress. That's not a real documentary girl or whatever. You know, because they use their own names. They played themselves kind of thing. But you can Google almost anybody, so they're going to show up as an actor or an actress or a performer or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you could get away with the same marketing scheme now with the way things are. Although, you know, now we're into the whole world of deep fakes and all that other stuff where you can do anything CGI-wise. I do compliment the movie on that. Other than some bloody teeth, there's like literally no special effect in this movie.
No. Not one. I mean, that's another reason why it's kind of boring.
Well, I kind of like the fact that they can create a mood without it.
Like I said, I go back and forth with it. I give them kudos for being creative, but right. I can't praise them for the finished
product. Create enough.
They didn't create enough. I mean, there's only so much I want to see of these guys improvising in the woods.
Okay, so everybody who's watching us live right now on the YouTube, give a rating. Right now in the chat, give a rating of what you would rate this movie, 1 to 10. Tim's going to rate it a 2.5 or something, you know. But what would you rate it? So anybody listening, let Tim know. So yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's come for me. I don't care.
I don't mean come for you. I just mean it'd be interesting to see what people think.
Honestly, if you like this movie, I will respect your opinion publicly.
And I will chastise you privately.
Privately, I will have my little voodoo dolls and my toenail clippings out doing some stuff. The only other key I have, we've already mentioned, and it's kind of incestuous in that it is the documentary he did for Sci-Fi that was directly tied into this movie. I mean, so this movie was inspiring things before it was even released.
Before it was even released, it had a sequel or another key. A
prequel,
yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Strange. So.
Definitely. I mean, summing up, I would agree with you. I think it will go down in film history as a must-see or at least to experience. But there are some people that feel the same way about, like, Nosferatu, or they, you know, and they don't like it or whatever. And it will always be known for that. But I think it deserves kudos for the marketing, for the acting, and for the creativity that went into doing something, you know, totally low budget and strange and off the hook. So
yeah, look how much scarier the woods behind me looks than those woods they were in.
Look, that's scary, dude.
We didn't see that in the movie.
Makes snot come out your nose. Look at that. Yeah.
All right. So, for those of you that were here for a live show,
woohoo!
We weren't. We promise we weren't pulling a Blair Witch on you.
Yeah.
Something came up and we had to record this last minute very fast because we weren't going to be available on Monday.
Yeah.
So we may try this again with a little better planning, and we hope that you have enjoyed it. And like David said, I am here to answer any comments if there are any, or if you're pissed off and left, I guess I will just sign off.
But Tim, this is year four. We're on a roll.
From now on, we are on a roll. We have some really exciting stuff coming up, including our 100th episode in three more episodes. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Next week's going to be great, though. You guys who are back, welcome back. Welcome us back to the fourth year, and you got to join us as we got a really great lineup this year.
We do. It's instead last year was kind of comic centric. This season is kind of female centric.
Yeah,
got a lot of strong female roles coming up this season.
And we started with the lovely Heather Donahue.
The lovely snotty Heather Donahue.
What the fuck is going on? Okay. So, Tim, as always, thank you. Every week is awesome. Love it.
It is awesome. I had a blast.
Yep.
So.
And all of you on YouTube, click the subscribe thing and all that.
Yeah, ring that bell while you're on here.
Become a Patreon. We would love for you to be a patron for us.
Yeah, we've got, I don't know what's there. We still got a few episodes of the first season of the X-Files, and then we're going to continue with that for a while before we go back to Star Trek.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So.
Yeah, awesome.
Thank you guys for listening and watching.
I will talk to you later.
Hi, man.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to Johnny Has the Keys. You can learn more about us at our website, johnnyhasthekeys.com, and our Facebook page. Avoid missing shows by subscribing on iTunes and Google Play, and please please like, rate, and review us. We're doing this for genre geeks like ourselves, and we can't continue without your support. See you next show, and don't lose your keys.